This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. To anyone who has driven through the streets of Detroit, have you ever taken a moment, or maybe more than a moment, to look, to notice? Notice hardy small businesses or homes, perhaps in neighborhoods that don't look at first glance like they could support, say, a family-run bar or maybe a florist shop in someone's living room. John Carlisle has taken the time to look, to notice, to knock on a door, and then to uncover stories that are fascinating, touching, surprising. Stories about the people and some of the forgotten places in Detroit. John's writings are well known to readers of the Metro Times, where he files his stories as Detroit blogger John. He's taken 42 of those stories with great photographs and put them in a book called 313, Life in the Motor City. John Carlisle, how did you come to be the guy who will knock on a door and discover the people and the stories behind that door?
Well, you know, the coverage of Detroit has sort of dwindled over the years. And being a Detroiter and being a journalist, when I would talk to people on the streets, they would always say roughly the same thing. They'd say, you guys always write about, and by you guys, I mean the media in general, they say, all you guys write about is Kwame or shootings. And so they were always very reluctant to talk at first, and they distrusted the media. And to me, they had a point that, you know, despite the crime or despite all the horror stories we hear, there's a whole lot of people in the city who are just regular folks trying to get by. And I never really saw stories about them. So I kind of just set out to write about people that you'd never hear of, people who are either keeping their neighborhood alive or sustaining a business in the city or just somehow doing something positive that somehow kept things going.
For folks who are listening who have not had a chance to read your pieces in the Metro Times, and now they're together in this book, 313, Life in the Motor City, I want you to give us an example of one of these great people and recap for us one of my favorite stories. It's called A Day of Rest. The back room of a little Detroit shop becomes one man's oasis. Talk to us a little about Mike Sherdell.
Well, he was one of my typical finds, which is, you know, I'll often just hop in the car and drive around or get out, I'll park and walk the block and just knock on every door. And there was this little antique shop over on Meringue on the east side, and it just so small and buried, and I don't even know if it has a sign. And it, like a lot of places in Detroit, they're nondescript and hidden unless you know about them. And he's a guy who came over from, he immigrated from Iran years ago, I think maybe 30 years ago, and worked in New York, and, you know, the classic immigrant story of working 2-3 jobs to make it, and he wound up in Detroit, and I believe he was a landlord for a while, but he opened this antique shop, which was kind of his real passion, and now he's older, he's well past retirement age, but it's one of those cases where this is all he knows, this is what he's got left, and this is his life, it's been that for so long, there's really no reason to give it up. But he's in such a bad area that there's really no customer base for him, except for the handful of people who may have known him through the years. And so I spent a couple of days with him, and it was just this sort of sweet portrait of this elderly man who spent his days in the back room. He'd watch satellite TV from the Middle East, or just, you know, have his prayer beads in his hand saying prayers and sip his home-brewed tea. And it was just this placid scene where he would live out his days in this quiet solitude. And to me, that was very touching.
It was. It was extremely touching. You also tell us the backstory of a business that I have seen a bazillion times. Now, I grew up in Ferndale, so going up and down Woodward, going to the then University of Detroit, and I would pass the donut shop, the Dutch Girl donut shop, and hear you told us the story that there really was a Dutch Girl.
Yeah, you know, it turns out it was started, like a lot of those old businesses, maybe, you know, decades ago, by a woman who's now considerably older, but she was from Holland, and they called it Dutch Girl Donuts. And it was one of those places that, especially being on a main drag like Woodward, a lot of us pass going to and from the city, but, you know, because the neighborhood's foreboding, a lot of people won't stop, or you can see through the lit windows at nighttime that there's bulletproof glass, and that intimidates a lot of people. But you go in there and you find that it's just this hardworking family that's kept this business going for years and years, and it's just that the neighborhood changed around them, but inside there it's exactly as it was decades ago. And so these places are almost like little time capsules of what life was like before, and that's one of them. And so she still comes in, and, you know, she's this sweet elderly woman, and her family runs the business, and they make donuts like they used to 50 years ago. And that's what I try to capture in the book, which is there's a lot of little places like that still alive that a lot of people who haven't even been to Detroit in 20, 30 years might still remember and probably don't know are actually still there the same as before.
I'm talking with John Carlisle, whose book 313, Life in the Motor City, is just full of delicious profiles, 42 stories of people and businesses and forgotten places in the city of Detroit. John, we talked about some businesses. You also find some of the interesting personalities, the people. Talk to us about Mr. Bowtie. I love Mr. Bowtie.
Yeah, he was great, and he was another guy that I just found by driving by, and he kind of captures that can-do spirit or do-it-yourself spirit of a lot of Detroiters, because right now there's not a lot of opportunities out there, and so a lot of people have to sort of create their own. And he's a guy who came up with this sort of niche career, which is polishing headlights on cars. And it's one of those things that a lot of people don't think their headlights need polishing, but he insists that a car looks better if the headlights are clean. And so he came up with his own shtick, which is to dress up in a red bow tie and like a tuxedo outfit, basically red pants, red shoes. And he will stand on the corner of a street, say somewhere along 7 Mile, and try to beckon people over to get their headlights cleaned. And it's what's funny about it and what's challenging for him, it's a 27-minute process. So it's not so easy to snag someone who's on their way somewhere to stop for 27 minutes to watch this guy polish their headlights and do this task they didn't even know needed to be done. And so it was a touching story because it's like this uphill battle for this earnest guy who's trying to make a living, trying to make this business he came up with take off. And so the time I spent with him was fascinating because it was really just watching a salesman get rejected one time after another. And finally, as I write in the story, finally somebody says, okay, you can do it. And you can just see the relief on his face. And he goes through this elaborate scenario where he'll take pictures of your before and after headlights. He'll print them out for you. He'll sign them. He'll put his business card on the back. It's this whole elaborate procedure, but it's so charming because he's so sincere about it and trying so hard to make it. And some people will actually stop just for that. They don't even need their headlights clean, but they'll admire the fact that this guy is trying so hard to make a living the honest way that they'll give him the money and let him do the service just on principle. And so that became the story. And he is like you said, a very fascinating Detroit character.
John, what do you think your stories and your photographs say about, first of all, the people of Detroit?
Well, I hope, and I hope I do, I capture it, but I try to capture the, you know, I don't want to say the positive side, because some of the stories aren't always happy stories,
right,
but just the real side of Detroit, the real people that don't take part in the sensational aspects of the city, whether it's corruption in city government or whether it's the high crime in the neighborhoods. It's just regular people trying to get by with what they have. And especially now in Detroit, with so many challenges, especially with city government so broke, there's not as much you can rely on from the city. The trash doesn't always get picked up. The streetlights aren't always lit. The police don't always respond to 911. And so in many ways in Detroit, you're on your own, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing, because it's a good thing because you're free to do whatever you want in a way. You can become Mr. Bowtie, or you can throw a blues concert in an empty field, or you can become the neighborhood patrol watch, but it's also not good because when you need help, it's often not there. And so to me, it really captures the resilience of people when faced with these challenges, the things they can come up with to keep their neighborhood and by extension their city alive.
I would imagine that you would, if you could, issue, let's say, a challenge, for lack of a better word, to our listeners from other parts of Michigan who either haven't been to Detroit or they go to Detroit, they go to the Joe, see the Red Wings, go to Comerica Park, see the Tigers, and then get out. And they're not stopping to really look. They're on the freeway and they're heading out of town. And I suspect if you could, you'd like to issue a challenge to those folks.
Well, you know, it's a mix because, yeah, you know, a lot of people will come in. There's the main arteries that you can get off right at the casino or right at the stadiums, and then you hop right back on, and it's sort of you're in a safe little zone. But there is something to be said for getting out off those arteries and onto some of the main roads or secondary roads and seeing what's out there, especially for people who used to live here and do remember some places, because they might be surprised a lot of them are still there. A lot of the old bakeries or old restaurants or, you know, little retail shops. And, you know, just using common sense like you would in any big city, there's a lot to be said for getting out and exploring. And you can, you know, use your instinct and see that this area isn't so bad. There's not a gang standing on the corner. So go ahead and get out and see what's going on in this bakery. You might be surprised who's in there. It could be someone who's been there 70 years, which I found, or an antique shop that has things you will not find anywhere else in the country because nobody knows it's there. So these items sit underpriced or underappreciated in this little shop. And it might be something you've looked for forever, but never thought to look in Detroit. So there's so much to discover, and hopefully the book points directly to some of them, but even for people who just want to find things on their own, a quick drive can yield so many surprising discoveries, and I do encourage that.
And you did allude to the security aspect, because that is clearly something that someone coming from the outside is going to say, will I be safe? I mean, you've heard it, and I've heard it, the people who say, well, I wouldn't go south of 8 Mile. It's that feeling is out there. So address that concern that people might have about security. Have you ever felt, you know, in danger or afraid as you have prowled the neighborhoods?
Well, I grew up here, so I think I have a sort of instinct for where, what are the better areas, what are the worst areas, and what situations to avoid. But I've still run into trouble. It might be partly because I seek it out. You know, I go to a lot of the very bad areas just to see, you know, what life is like there. But, I mean, I'm still alive. And I go out unarmed, and, you know, I'm walking around with a very shiny, expensive camera, and, you know, I stand out, and a lot of it's demeanor, and a lot of it's just knowing where you should be and where you shouldn't be. But for the most part, you know, a lot of the crime is crime of opportunity, and you're going to get that in any urban setting where there's a lot of poverty, or, you know, even more negatively, some people who have addictions, and they're desperate for money, and it's just like, it is anywhere in any big city. In some parts of Detroit, it's more than it is in other cities, but you just kind of have to use common sense. And really, in the daytime, broad daylight, if you're exploring, you really shouldn't run into too much trouble. And just, again, using common sense, you could have a very nice, adventuresome day.
The book is 313, Life in the Motor City by John Carlisle. It was a wonderful read, and it's something that I know I found in years as a news reporter in Detroit that you get talking to people, you go down a street and you think there's nothing here, and then there is the immaculate little house with the beautifully painted picket fence and flowers, and maybe there are bars in the window for security, but there's a sense of pride, and you realize someone's saying, I'm making a stand and I'm going to live my life here. I have to, so I'm going to make the best of it. And it's a wonderful way to meet the real people of the Motor City. John Carlisle, thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. I appreciate it.